Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, June 8th, 2013. This is episode 985. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by ShareFile from Citrix. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile. Try it today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And oh, do we have lots to talk about this week. Technology, computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater with Scott Wilkinson at 33 and a third after the hour. Our phone number, and the phones are already lit and full. Wow, that didn't take long. If you want to talk to H-Bomb, we probably shouldn't use that name for you this week. Heather Amon, if you want to talk to her and the NSA, just call 8888-ASK-LEO. That would be the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Now, if you're calling from outside the U.S., you're pretty much guaranteed that the NSA will be listening in, but you could do that via Skype because that only, you know, that only has a backdoor for the Microsoft Corporation, and otherwise you're completely safe. I'm being facetious. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather and I were talking before the show about this whole Prism thing. And, you know, if I were a good radio talk show host, which I'm not, but if I were a good radio talk show host, I would be up in arms and dancing up and down and saying, I'm wearing my black shirt because I don't want to be seen by the black helicopters. The government is eavesdropping on everything. So but I'm not a good radio host. In fact, what I'm really most interested in is finding out what the truth is about this and how bad it all is. And if it's something to go crazy about or what. I don't know if I want to call him friend. My colleague, Mike Arrington, has a very let me start with the facts, and then we can get and the facts are a little bit obscure. It all started with a blogger, very interesting fellow named Glenn Greenwald, who's writing for the British paper The Guardian. And Glenn discovered, probably through his own sources, he's an attorney, very thoughtful, very methodical, and fundamentally apolitical. He's not, he doesn't fall anywhere, at least as far as I can tell, on the political spectrum. So presumably no axe to grind here. He published an article in The Guardian this week. He's his whole life been blogging about civil liberties. First for Salon, and The Guardian picked him up. He's been blogging about Prism. This is the program that the National Security Administration runs to intercept data from pretty much everywhere. And the first reaction that I had to it was, this is appalling. And I had hoped for better from President Obama, although this is a program that was started under President Bush. We've kind of known about this or something like this for some time. The question has always been, well, how deep and wide does the data mining go? For a long time, the NSA has said, of course, our charter doesn't allow us to spy on U.S. Citizens on U.S. soil. So we only look at phone calls from the U.S. to foreign countries, in particular looking for terrorist activity. If it is within the United States, we then give it to the FBI, whose charter is to monitor terrorist activity and other illegal activities inside the United States. Companies involved at this point apparently are Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, in addition to, we know, Verizon, and we presume because Verizon, all the other cell phone companies. And they're required to. This is something that happened in 2001 with the Patriot Act and the FISA courts. The FISA courts were are secret courts that were founded with the notion that we do need some oversight over what government is doing, but the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act said we'll do this in secret, and we will go to the FISA, secret FISA court, and say we would like to investigate this. They will say, okay, then we will write something called a national security letter. All of this is under the Patriot Act, to the internet body or the phone company involved and say, we want this information. In 97% of these national security letters, part of the letter says, and you can't say anything to anybody. This is top secret. So much so, you know, we don't want to let the terrorists know what we're up to, so you can't reveal this information to the press or anybody. You can't say, hey, to the person involved, just so you know, the feds are asking for your phone data. It's secret. So that, and that's been going on, we presume, for the entire decade. I mean, this is just, and I don't think that that's anything new. What Glenn Greenwald revealed is that Verizon, in particular, and then, as I said, I think you can presume if it's Verizon, it's every other cell phone company, had been handing over en masse call records for everybody, just everybody here. And records that didn't include the call, I might add. But records that included who was calling, who was being called, their phone numbers, time, date, all of that. And as we know with data mining technology these days, that's probably enough to get started. You can build a web, who knows whom, who's talking to whom, when, very quickly. Computers can recognize these patterns very quickly and come up with information. Now, the most generous interpretation of all this is, and this is, by the way, the administration's interpretation, we are doing this in a constrained way. We are looking for terrorism. This is to protect you. President Obama specifically said in his response to this, look, you have to give up a little bit of privacy and a little bit of convenience if you want 100% security. And we feel we're giving up as little as possible in order to keep an eye on the kind of traffic that indicates terrorist activity. And he pointed to a specific threat to blow up, to set off bombs in the New York subway, which was stymied, halted by the information gathered by PRISM. They were able to see this guy making calls. They were able to see what he was up to. They then tracked him down with plain old police work, followed him. It was kind of a Keystone Cops because they arrested him on the bridge into New York, but then let him go. But anyway, in the long run, they stopped this guy. And the president says, hey, see, it works. That's the most charitable, I think, interpretation of it. Okay, we can break it down a little bit. 100% security, really? Well, okay. How much privacy do we give up? How much inconvenience? I don't know if inconvenience is anything anybody's worried about at this point. Privacy is what we're worried about. And then there's the further question of how much does Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, Apple, whoever has your data, how much do they give up and when? And all these companies say, to a man or woman, all these CEOs say, no. We get these requests. We can't reveal these requests. We fight them unless they are, is a legitimate NSL, a legitimate subpoena, a legitimate request from a federal official. We do not give up stuff. Every one of them says, the feds do not have backdoor access to our servers. The feds do, they say very clearly, Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Page, Larry Page's post on the Google blog began, what the? And I think Google has been very active in being transparent as possible about what the government's asking. Remember, the government can say, you can't tell anybody. What apparently has happened, and this I believe, is that these companies have made servers, special servers for the government, so that and this makes sense, frankly, so when the government asks for information, they don't have to pop it in the mail. They don't email it to them. They put it on a secure server, which the government has access to, a Dropbox that the government has access to. That does not mean that anybody has blanket access to Google's or Microsoft's servers. And I believe them on that. Um, Let me read my, now I can read, now that you understand kind of the broad outline. I'm sure you've been reading about this all week. And you know, it's technologists that have to weigh in on this because we know what's possible. Mike Arrington, who's a very, very well-known blogger and certainly outspoken blogger, titled his blog post, Cowards. We're going to take a break, and I'll read you an excerpt from Cowards in just a bit. And we can have this conversation. What do you think's going on? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, I mean, if I were a firebrand talk show host, like every other talk show host, I would say, you know, the government is, you know, listen, you people, the government's been spying us for years. They know everything. And what's really scary is because of the power of computers to sift through this data very amazingly effectively. We've seen, for instance, that anonymized search engine data, completely and supposedly anonymized. And that's the word, by the way, you want to see that. You'll see this word all the time, anonymized, even in this discussion. Even though these databases, I think it was Yahoo provided a database of anonymized search information, just search queries and responses to a researcher, a reporter in, I think from the Miami Herald, went through it and was able to say, oh, well, based on these searches, I'll put this together. This was a human, not even a computer. I'll put these together. Yeah, that's that woman. And called her up. And she said, what? Yes, I've been searching for this, this, and this. So if a human being can do it, you can imagine how quickly a computer, this is what we call big data, can go through this stuff and find it quickly. Yeah, the Mother Jones would be one of the most anti-government, and I like Mother Jones. Let's see what Mother Jones says. Mother Jones is a progressive magazine that has a strong anti-government bias. It's funny how you get both sides of this. You get the No Agenda crowd, the libertarian Rand Paul crowd, and you get the Mother Jones crowd. Everybody on the far left and far right is up in arms. What does PRISM do? PRISM do? How does it work? The Guardian described it as providing direct access to corporate servers owned by the likes of Google and Microsoft. Now, and this is the question, is it to all the data? Is it to data provided to the government from these companies? Is it a backdoor? And both Mark Zuckerberg and Larry Page are very quick to say, no, it's not a backdoor. And this article doesn't really say much. PRISM is just another, name for something that's been going on for a long time. Here's the original Glenn Greenwald Guardian article. And this is great. He has what looks like a PowerPoint presentation on PRISM. Allows officials to collect material, including search history, contents of emails, file transfers, and live chats. It's a 41-slide PowerPoint classified as top secret. No distribution to foreign allies, even, which was used to train intelligence operatives on the capabilities of the program. The document claims collection directly from the servers of major U.S. providers. Apple says, never heard of it. Google says Google does not have a backdoor. Mark Zuckerberg says no. The problem is we have to parse this, and we can't know exactly what it is at this point. And there's two different interpretations. Perfect, Nathan. You know, if you carry a cell phone, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, you know, if you carry a cell phone, you carry kind of the perfect spy device, right? What's the first thing Jason Bourne does when he picks up the girl who's being hounded by foreign agents and she gets in the car all scared? What's the first thing Jason Bourne does? He takes her cell phone and he throws it out the window. He knows. You know. This thing has a microphone. It has GPS. It has a camera. It is tied directly into the cell phone carrier. It's no wonder we're a little paranoid. in your pocket. If you could, if James Bond could design a device that would be perfect, a perfect way to get Dr. No, he'd give him a cell phone. Oh, and Dr. No, make sure you make all your phone calls through it. Just in case. Moneypenny, what's happening with James, with Dr. No's phone? So, of course, we're paranoid. Because we know, don't we, that everything we do now goes through electronic networks. So to boil down the debate at this point, Glenn Greenwald, again, the blogger and writer for The Guardian, claims to have found a PowerPoint presentation, top secret, 41-page PowerPoint presentation, so secret it was not even to be revealed to our allies abroad, that claims, quote, data collection directly from the servers of major U.S. service providers. That would be cell companies, and that would be Google, Microsoft, Apple, Yahoo, Facebook. If you really want to be a black helicopter type, you might point out that the CIA is a big investor in Facebook. Did you know the CIA has a venture capital arm? The Central Intelligence Agency is a big investor in Facebook. This is public knowledge. You might say, if you're really a paranoid person, gee, Facebook, if you were going to design something designed to gather all the possible information about U.S. citizens possible and foreign citizens too, start a company that does that and then give backdoor access to the feds. Mark Zuckerberg says, no, the feds don't have backdoor access. Google says that. The charitable interpretation and the interpretation that all of these CEOs say is we have met with the feds. We only respond to legal federal requests for information, national security letters, which are top secret. So we don't know what the contents are or who the targets are, and subpoenas and other legal documents. And when they do that, at their request, we've worked this out. Twitter's the only company that doesn't do this, by the way. But every other company says, yeah. Twitter says, no, we're required to give them the information, but we're not required to set up a server for them. They can come and get it. I like the attitude, but come on. So what these other companies, Facebook and Google and Microsoft, said, so forth, do, they've set up a secure server, a computer in a basement somewhere, where when data is requested about somebody, and it's legally requested by federal officials, they will take that data, put it on the server. The feds have access to that server. So you could interpret that as data collection directly from the servers of those companies. That's what those companies say is going on. Now, let me read to you what my friend Ike Arrington, who titled his blog post, Cowards, says. This is the other way. And, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I don't think we have enough information to know which way this goes. So a lot of this is, and as I said, if I were a great talk show host, I would definitely fall on the side of the conspiracy theorist. But a lot of this depends on your kind of bent and what you believe. And I'll tell you what I believe in a second. Cowards, he writes. Will not one tech CEO stand up and tell the truth? Which might point out they may be legally bound not to. I don't. The NSA story of the secret assassination of the Fourth Amendment continues to unfold. I'm not sure why he picks the Fourth Amendment for this. But anyway, that's the, you know, right to not to unreasonable search and seizure. So I guess it is Fourth Amendment. It's also First Amendment, the right to speak freely. Today we heard from Google CEO Larry Page and Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Page was confused. His post title is, what the? Zuckerberg claimed the press reports were outrageous. Both made strong denials of specific allegations like direct access and backdoors. Both were, now Mike Arrington is a lawyer, so I'm sure he knows how to parse these sentences. Both were technically telling the truth. Both were also overtly misleading people. He refers to an article by Claire Kane Miller at the Times blowing the lid off the allegations. Miller writes, in at least two cases at Google and Facebook, one of the plans discussed was to build separate secure portals, like a digital version of the secure physical rooms that have long existed for classified information, in some instances on company servers. Through these online rooms, the government would request data, companies would deposit it, and the government would retrieve it. By the way, this is exactly what happens right now with local and federal law enforcement, with the cell phone companies. We know Sprint does this. We're pretty sure AT&T, Verizon, and others do it. They have a portal for law enforcement, where law enforcement can come in. By the way, in many cases, they don't need a warrant or a court order of any kind. There's a kind of search order called a pen register, where the law enforcement can say, we just want to know where Leo was yesterday. Don't need a warrant. Don't need court approval. They just say, where was Leo yesterday? And because I carry around a cell phone, they can go to the cell site, pay $1.50. It's actually a profit center for some of these companies, and get that information. I think that's very similar to what's going on here, although these big companies like Google and Microsoft are saying, but we do say they have to have a warrant or a national security letter. Instead of adding a backdoor to their servers, these companies were essentially asked, I'm going on reading the New York Times article, to erect a locked mailbox and give the government the key. That seems completely reasonable. What do you want them to do? Send them a box of paper? An email? No, this is the right way to do it. In case you missed it, Miller spells it out for you, Mike Arrington writes. While handing over data in response to a legitimate FISA request is a legal requirement, making it easier for the government to get the information is not. So what we are upset about is that people are making it easier for the government, or I wouldn't say easier, maybe more secure, more direct for the government to get the information they legally demanded and the companies are legally required to hand over. If that's the crime, I'm not too upset. And Twitter, as I said, decided, no, we're not going to make it easy. So I don't think there's evidence, I'd like to see it, that this goes beyond these drop boxes, these special lock boxes. And I think this is, if you think about it from a purely engineering point of view, this is the obvious and best way to do this. If the FBI asks for information about Leo Laporte and Google mails it to them or emails it to them, that's not good. If they put it in a secure server, encrypted server with encryption, and only the FBI has access to it, that's the right way to do it. I don't see that that's the problem. So I think we're going to throw that contention out. But there is this more general concern of, so I don't think the NSA, I'll tell you my opinion, we don't know, but I don't think there's any evidence the NSA or anybody else has direct access to Google's entire database. That's absurd. And I don't believe it's true. However, if you think that they're not spying on us all the time, you're nuts. And I'll talk about that when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my good friends at Stamps.com. These are This is a product for anybody who's a postal professional. Stamps.com is right for a business like ours where we're sending out stuff, mailers and bills all the time. If you sell online like eBay or Etsy and you do your own fulfillment, Stamps.com turns you into a professional fulfillment house. You never go to the post office. I think that's the big come on for Stamps.com. How do you feel about going to the post office? Don't. You don't have to. You can do everything you could do at the post office right from your desk with your computer and your printer and Stamps.com. That means postage on demand, your own stamps, your own mailing labels. Stamps.com will send you a USB scale, so you always have exactly, I got it here somewhere, you always have exactly the right postage for any class of mail, everything from a postcard to a big old package. And by the way, Stamps.com has a software that will help you pick the right class of mail. If you want to do priority or express mail, they'll automatically email the recipient with a confirmation tracking number, and then the mail carrier comes to you and picks the stuff up, so you don't even have to get up from your desk. Oh, hi, here it is. Here's 800 packages, and I did it all with my little scale and stamps.com. Print postage from your computer, it doesn't seem possible. By the way, you'll save up to 80% over a postage meter. That's pretty old school, too. This is not a postage meter. It's just your computer and printer. When I need stamps, this is a side benefit. If you're the boss of your small business, when I need stamps, I come in and I tell Frederick, hey, could you print some stamps? And she, it feels a little like I'm getting away with something. She prints out a sheet of stamps. I don't go to the post office. I'm here. Forever stamps. Love it. Stamps.com. You'll love it too. Go to stamps.com and try it for free. How about that? It's a no risk trial offer. It's worth $110. You get the digital scale. That's actually not free. You have to pay postage, shipping and handling. I think it's $5. But you do get to keep the scale, no matter what. You also get $55 in free postage coupons that you can use over the first few months of your membership, which is really not free postage. $55. What's wrong with I love that. And, of course, you get a 30-day no-risk trial. Stamps.com. Give it a try today. Now, here's the deal. The big deal, if on the front page of Stamps.com you see that $80 deal, notice that's not $55 free postage. Here's how you get the extra free postage. Click the radio microphone, the old-fashioned microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use our offer code TECHGUY, two words, TECHGUY. And then that's a $110 bonus offer. We give you more free postage just for mentioning us. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. Use my offer code TECHGUY. So there's kind of the facts and a little bit of my opinion on this. I'm not so worried about Prism. It seems to me a red herring. What is Google giving the government? Folks, what's your internet service provider giving your government? For years, there have been whispers, and in fact, the British government admitted to it, about a program called Echelon, which was a joint program of the U.S. and our allies to collect all electronic transactions and go through them, sift through them for keywords like bomb, hummus, you know, anything that might indicate terrorism. The U.S. government has never admitted to Echelon, but in fact, the British have. And this has been going on for years. Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the U.K., and the United States have been doing this for years. And no one disputes this. So the question of whether the feds have a backdoor into Google is really kind of small compared to this larger issue of at what point is this data being gathered? Probably on the internet backbones, all the data. Where is it being stored? The suspicion is it's going to Utah. The NSA is building a massive data center in Utah. Massive. Why would they need a massive data center? What would they be doing? Where would all that data be coming from? And they are probably using keywords. They're probably not saying, what is Leo Laporte up to? But they probably are searching your email and my email and everybody else's email and phone calls and chats looking for, electronically, by the way, using computers. No human could do this, for patterns. This is going on. There's no question this is going on. So I don't worry so much about whether they have a backdoor into Google. Come on. They know everything. They know more than that. They know more than Google. The question is, what do we do about it? And I think that the real issue is, I think we gave permission when we allowed our Congress to pass the Patriot Act. And if you're upset about this, and I think many of us are, because I do think we're rolling back the Bill of Rights, I do think this is a bad thing. And I don't know how effective it is, frankly, in fighting terrorism. And I think there's a huge risk that law enforcement will use this in other ways for phishing expeditions. That government is, I think the government is relatively benign. I know some of you do not. But should you have a government that is not benign, this would be very dangerous. So what do? You write to your member of Congress and you say, time to end the Patriot Act. But you know, we as a nation, we said we're afraid. We gave the government permission to do anything by any means necessary to protect us. And this is what you get. That's the trade-off. Now, in shows to come, I'll talk about ways that you can secure what you're doing 100%. This is why I don't think this stuff is effective. Because, well, a lot of law enforcement, and I've talked to everybody from the Secret Service on down, I've talked to a lot of federal officials, sometimes officially. They want to know about technology. They rely on the stupidity of crooks. You know, the idea that you can encrypt your data in a way that no one can see it and it's completely private, I've talked about this with the Secret Service that said, well, you know, we just ask them for the password. 9 times out of 10, they give it to us. Or they put it on a Post-it note. It's very rare that we need to use deep, dark forensic technologies to get this stuff. Crooks aren't so bright. The problem is crooks are getting brighter, technology's getting better, and it's more widespread. And so I think they're very, probably reasonably afraid that at some point, terrorists, let's admit this is really about terrorism, terrorists will start using techniques that will cloak this stuff from federal discovery. They can do it today. You can do it today. It's easy. So if you are paranoid, if you are worried, it's not so hard. And I can talk about ways to protect yourself. Now, how do you feel? Should I say that out loud? Or maybe a terrorist is listening. How widespread should this knowledge be? Does it make you a little nervous that maybe somebody planning to do no good might be listening and find a way to hide his transgressions? Effectively, this is totally easy. From the feds? Do you want that information to get out? Now, how do you feel? All right, we have a lot more to do, and I do want to open the phones and give you a chance to talk. Before we do that, though, I also want to say hello to our home theater expert, Mr. Scott Wilkinson, who is on the line and joins us every day, usually a little earlier than this, but I thought it was worth talking about. And,
oh, it's absolutely worth talking about.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about it on our podcasts because we do a number of podcasts. In fact, I think the big debate, the big roundtable, we've got people from all sides of this, will be a Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on our This Week in Tech show. And I will continue to talk about this. There's a lot more to it, and I think it doesn't serve the conversation to just be knee-jerk and rattle sabers and say, the government's out to get us, and this is it. It's all over. Because it's something we agreed to, frankly. So we have to decide.
Unfortunately so.
The thing I do not like is the lack of transparency. And I understand they don't want the terrorists to know, but we can't have a conversation about this unless the government says, here's what we want to do. Here's what we're doing. And there needs to be total transparency so that we can, as a nation, decide, well, how far do we want to go? Scott, hello. Scott is
Leo.
Scott is the editor of the editor in chief of the AV forums, AVS forums, the really wonderful forums for video friends. He's also the host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast. Joins us every week to talk home theater. What you up to these days, Scotty?
Well, I'm sitting here listening to you and some folks in the chat room are going, how can we protect our home theaters?
shaking our heads. You know, they can look at your rentals.
Exactly. And you're streaming. More and more people are streaming their content from Netflix and YouTube and all kinds of different places.
So stop streaming those bomb-making videos because you're just going to get a knock on the door.
You know, are they watching what movies we rent? And if we rent such movies, certain movies, then we're a suspect. That's a little creepy. But I don't know how to do that.
Do you have a grocery store card? Because nobody will admit this, but for a long time there've been rumors that, among other things, they look for people who are buying hummus, falafel, and other Middle Eastern foods at the grocery store as one point of information. I don't think they'll arrest you for it. But you make yourself a target.
Right.
Do you have a Safeway Club card?
Because
that's how they
do.
Find out.
Yeah, I know.
So are you mad at Safeway? Safeway gives them a big fat back door. Are you mad?
Yeah. And they also give me a discount, which encourages me to use the card.
Right. Go ahead and try to buy something at Safeway. You know, it costs 10 times more if you don't have a card.
For a long time, I refused to use the card for this exact reason.
I still don't.
And then I finally gave up.
I still don't, because I don't want them to know what I eat.
Right. Well, I actually do. I do eat falafel once in a while.
Well, see, I knew you were suspicious. Just give us something light. Home theater.
Something light. Okay, I went the other day to a really cool event. B&W, the high-end speaker company, you know them. And Maserati,
yeah,
they're the best. Yeah, and Maserati, the high-end Italian car maker, have gotten together, and I can tell you about it another time.
No, we'll take a break and come back with more. The Unholy Alliance of Maserati and BMW coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, I wanted to complete the conversation.
Of course.
I don't know if I have. I don't think you can in 45.
Well, there's probably no completion.
Yeah.
You know, you... came to a
so many people are just gonna I think there's so much you know, and when you read Mike Arrington, he didn't say anything. Cowards, come on, Mike. It's such blatant link bait. Really admire Declan McCullough for it, you know, parsing it and writing a very good article. Should get Declan on the show.
By the way, Leo, just FYI.
Yeah.
I will not be here next weekend.
Okay.
For the unfortunate reason of a good friend of mine died, and the memorial is next weekend San Diego. Yeah.
Was that sudden?
No. He'd been fighting cancer for a year.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thanks. But it's in San Diego. It's, you know, there's a lot of activity around the thing, and my wife and I are playing music and for it, and so I figured it would be better if I just, if you don't mind, bow out next weekend.
Of course
just
not.
One weekend.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
Quite no, Kafka. K4 Kafka, not a big tuba convention. I'm sad to say.
No, that would be so much better.
I wish it were.
Go to a tuba convention anyway.
I wish I could, believe
me.
Hey,
did they come out with that Headphone X app yet?
It's scheduled. DTS tells me it's scheduled for June 11th. But I've heard plenty of people on AVS Forum and even in the chat room
because there's
that it's
a dark
out now.
No, there's a dark night app. It's not the same thing, and that's
it's
what our chat room.
It's not the same thing. That's
so,
correct.
So, that's correct. Yeah, this is not out yet. As soon as it is, we'll play with it.
Yeah. No, I would. Ideally, you want to buy the deluxe CD edition of the Man of Steel score CD, and it then you get a code. You can download the app. You can download the entire score in Headphone X. So definitely want to encourage people to do that.
I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you, Tech Dino. This friend of mine actually is the guy who got me into measuring noise levels at a deeper level, if you will. He owned a company that I would go and measure noise levels at construction sites near residential areas to make sure they weren't exceeding, you know, the ordinance of, you know, you can't get louder than this between this time and that time. And then in the evening, it's got to be less and so on and so forth. So I worked for him for many years doing that, actually. And it will be he will be sorely missed. Aww. Yeah. Thank you, Loquacious. Nice to see you, too. Always great. And Troy of SD says that he has Z Plus, which is the name of that app. It is out, but I suspect it's the Dark Knight Rises version, not the Man of Steel version. And Z Plus, I don't think the one that's currently out has Dolby DTS Headphone X, which is really the killer
app.
Yeah,
they did something else for the Dark Knight. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But not 11.1 mixed in your headphones so that it sounds like speakers are out there.
There's this Man of Steel experience. That's not it. No, I don't think it's out yet.
I don't think they say June 11th.
Looking. Yeah.
June 11th, and the movie starts June 14th. Can't wait to be able to talk about it. I actually did see the movie in a preview screening, but I'm under embargo. So the fun. Sue, how are you, the Sue? Sorry, Lee.
That's why I don't do embargoes or NDAs. I don't like to not be able to say anything about
something. Yeah, I know. I'm totally hip.
If you're a print journalist, you have to used to have to because lead time is so bad. But
Yeah, which is why I'm so happy I'm online now. I'm so over print.
Nathan S., our musical director, he's doing a great job. Thank you, Nathan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll continue to talk about. In fact, we'll give you open the phones after Scott and give everybody a chance to weigh in on Prism and stuff. And I think what it really is almost a litmus test for your personal political beliefs. So, you know, if you think the government's out to get you, there's ample circumstantial evidence.
Fodder.
That's a good word for it. So, Maserati, which you said Maserati, right?
Maserati. High-end Italian car.
Lovely car. And BMW, the best British speaker. One of the best British speakers.
One of the best, certainly. No question about it. They have gotten together, and they've done a couple of interesting things. One is, of course, BMW has provided an optional car audio package for the latest Maserati, which is called the Quattroporte. And it starts at a mere $105,000, not including the B&W sound system. But they offer this in their newest car, and they held an event down in L.A., down in Hollywood, last week that I went to, and I got to sit in the car and listen to the sound system. It's really good, really good. But the other, and I think more interesting thing that they're doing together is they created a project called Seven Notes. Maserati has claimed, but their engineers have said, our engine is so musical that at certain RPMs it creates notes, musical notes. And so this producer, this trip-hop producer by the name of Howie B., Scottish guy, he's worked with Bjork and U2, Robbie Robertson. He brought a Maserati into Abbey Road Studios in London and recorded the engine at these different RPMs, at these different speeds, and then started creating music with the resulting samples. And so they're on a world tour to promote this project. And in Hollywood, they played some music. Howie B. was there, and he live mixed these sounds with other musical sounds, put them all together. And it was really quite good, at least if you like trip hop. It's very ambient, but it has a groove, a beat to it, you know?
I feel like somebody listening to the Tech Guy show. I don't understand what any of the words you're using. Trip-hop, groove, what I... are those technical terms? I don't understand.
No.
Let me ask you about car stereo.
Sure.
Can I back up a little bit?
Oh, absolutely.
Because all the luxury cars, if you spend, you know, usually around $5,000 or $6,000 more, you can get a premium system.
Yep.
Lexus has Mark Levinson. Right. Mercedes and Audi have B&O, Bang & Olufsen.
Right, Danish company.
Yeah, now B&W, British company, right, with Maserati.
Right.
Why, is this just, I mean, is it really sound much better? I mean, is it, it seems like you're in a car and it's noisy.
It's a real problem to get high quality good sound in a car because, as you say, it's very noisy.
And yet you're in an environment where, you know, the speakers can be precisely placed for where you're sitting.
Yep.
You can have many speakers. Infiniti uses Bose. A lot of companies use Bose. Yep. Have you ever done ratings of in-car premium audio systems?
I've never done
systems?
Any serious reviews, but I have. Several companies have given me, loaned me cars for a little
remember
while.
Remember, you had that, what was that, Dolby car?
It's actually THX.
THX car, yeah.
THX car that I drove up to Petaluma in, and I've driven to CES, and I listened to music on it. You really can do a pretty good job.
Now, you're Maserati, we should mention that Scott is a musician, and yes. So has the ear for this kind of stuff.
Yes, and Maserati was very interesting, this demo that I went to. You close the doors, and there was a lot of loud music going on outside in this airplane hangar, essentially.
Yeah.
And it wasn't completely gone, but it was down a good amount. So we could, in fact, hear the sound system in the car. And the B&W sound system has 7 tweeters, high-frequency drivers, and 7 mid-range drivers arranged throughout the cabin. So that they claim wherever you're sitting, front seat, back seat, driver's seat, passenger seat, you will hear good sound. They also employ...
Isn't it ironic? the best sound system in your life might be in your car?
Might be in your car.
I guess you spend a lot of time there. It's worth it.
You know, it is. Think so.
Yeah.
They also have several DSP modes where you can expand a stereo signal from a CD or an MP3 or whatever. Out throughout the speakers, all the speakers. There's a subwoofer in the back, too, by the way. And we listened to Boz Scaggs' Thanks to You, which has a lot of deep bass. Really sounded good.
People like
really
Boz good. Scaggs for some reason for sound demos. I don't know what it is. So the reason I ask is I just bought a premium car. It won't be arrived till the fall. Mm. But it has a B&O system in it.
Oh, well, that'll also sound great, I'm
1,400
sure.
watts, which is kind of crazy.
They even beat the B&W and the Maserati, which is 1,208 watts.
14 channels.
Yep.
I don't know if it has a subwoofer in the trunk, but that's what my son wants.
It probably has a subwoofer in order to get those low frequencies.
Wow.
It probably also has something called speed variable volume or speed dependent volume.
All I know is when you turn the key, actually it's a button, little tweeters come up out of the dashboard. I thought
that's cool.
That's what I bought it for. That I love that. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, actually, I'm sorry. 19 speakers. 19 speakers.
Oh man,
And you know, one of the only thing they're not in control of besides the outside noise is the number of people in the car and where they point the speakers, because the driver's not really in the prime position, right?
No, that's true. And certainly higher the frequency, the more directional it is. So they have to be careful in pointing the tweeters. The mid-range drivers and the subwoofer, not as much. The subwoofer certainly doesn't matter at all. But the way that they place those tweeters and how they aim them and stuff is very critical.
Well, B&O calls two of the speakers acoustic lenses, and I think that's because they're aiming at whoever's listening.
Yeah. That is a copyrighted term from B&O. That's true.
Crazy. Do you have a preference? Bose, B&O, Mark Levinson, B&W? There's some big names in audio.
There's some names out there. I'm not a fan of Bose, generally. Yeah. I don't think I've heard
no
of
No highs,
Bose.
No lows. That's Bose. That's what some of the
Bose.
People say. But I'll tell you, when I was in college, those Bose 901s, direct reflect speakers, those are the best speakers I ever heard. So.
Yep. But that was how many years ago now?
Yeah. No, don't ask. Yeah. 30, almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, me too. But
good speakers 40 years ago does not make a good speaker company today. Yeah.
Correct. That is exactly correct. But in fact, I made a pair of car speakers out of one of those 4-inch drivers that was in the Bose 901 in my college days, and it sounded pretty good.
You hacker, you.
I know. I'm a super hacker. Yeah, what can I say?
Yeah.
No, but the B&W system sounds great. Mark Levinson system sounds great. B&O, I'm sure, will sound great. I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure it will be just fantastic.
Well, I'll take you this fall.
Oh, I look forward to it. You bet.
It's not till the fall.
Well,
6 months or something for my
That's all right.
car.
6 months will go by like that.
Yeah, then I have to start paying for it. So it's probably better just to wait as long as possible.
Yeah.
Scott Wilkinson, he's the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. You can ask questions there. And, you know, this is something new that the AVS Forum has long been a great place for enthusiasts to gather and share tips and tricks. Wonderful place to go. You can get things like settings for your TV.
That's right.
If you want to calibrate it, you can get hacks for your TiVo. That's where I went for all the TiVo hacks in my TiVo hack book.
Got any question at all, you post it on AVS.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And you'll get tons of answers. You have to be a member in order to post questions and threads and stuff. But it's free. It's easy. You know, I do recommend it because then you're part of this real community of geeks.
Now, we were talking last week about what was it called? DTS
Headphone X. Headphone X.
And we're waiting for the Man of Steel soundtrack. Now, you said it's out June 11th.
Right.
Now, the chat room says, "What is this it? This is Z Plus Music by Remote Control Productions, the Hans Zimmer Man of Steel soundtrack through the new immersive 3D music app Z Plus. Now, Z Plus, that's it?
That's the one. That's it.
So it is out. So people
apparently
have been wondering.
It's out ahead of exactly.
Yeah, it says release June 8th, so it's out a few days ahead of time. So
ahead of when they told me it would be.
Yeah, thank you, Toronto Mario, in the chat room for finding that for us. And for people who want to try this, just to recap last week, this uses your headphones, even earbuds, I guess. The headphones.
Any normal headphones. The better the headphone, the better the experience.
To position stuff all around you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, and it sounds just like you're in a room with speakers out there, but they aren't out there.
I'm downloading it right now. I can't wait. I'm going to download it and listen during the break. Z Plus Music by Remote Control Productions. Scott Wilkinson is editor-in-chief of the new editorial portion of AVS Forum, which is fabulous. Thank you for being here, Scott. He also hosts Home Theater Geeks, our podcast, which will be on Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern at twit.tv. You can listen to old shows at twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Who's on Monday?
Monday is Jude Mansilla, the editor of headfi.org, a headphone-related website. And we're going to be talking about Headphone X and other surround simulations, as well as earbuds and lots of everything headphones.
Awesome! Scott Wilkinson, thanks for joining us. All right, we will go to the phones. We'll talk about Prism right after the news at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, let's take a break and talk about ShareFile.com. What do you say? One of our fine podcast sponsors. You know, it's really nice. We've given away this podcast of the show since I started in 2004. In fact, this was the first podcast I ever did. It was actually September 2004, when podcasting was just getting on its feet. I'd always offered downloads, but then I'd turn it into a podcast. And basically just giving it away. We always take the ads out of the podcast, as you might have noticed. But last year, we went back to Premiere and said, hey, would you mind if we put ads on it? And they said, no. So we don't do a lot, a couple of ads. But these sponsors want to reach the podcast audience as opposed to the radio audience, and they're great sponsors, and it helps defray the not insignificant cost of making this show. And then that way I can get a nice car. So I want to tell you about Chevy. Hey, I'm honest, okay? I don't do this for free. This is a job for me, and this is how we get paid. But it's why we can give you a free website. We spent almost $100,000 on that dare website. It's how we can have Josh, a full-time staffer, pretty much pays for Josh, working on the website, working on the podcast, the show notes, the editors who edit it, and all of that. I get a little bit of it. So with that preamble, may I mention ChairFile.com? This is actually a product I use every single week. It's from Citrix. They were looking, you know, Citrix has a portfolio of products for businesses. And what they were looking at is the idea of how you share data files with, you know, they maybe this is what the NSA should have used instead. Come to think of it, there would be far less problems. And it's completely secure. In fact, it's HIPAA compliant, which means if you're sharing even patient records with another physician, you obviously are not going to email those. And if you do, you're breaking the law because it's insecure. You're probably not going to put them on a, I won't mention names, but you know, there's a lot of cloud service. You're not going to just put it out there because you don't know how secure it is. ShareFile is specifically HIPAA compliant with regulations in a lot of industries because they use encryption. You have total control of the file. You could say when it can be downloaded, by whom, how password protected if you want. You can say how many times. For instance, I could say this file can be downloaded once over the next 24-hour period, and that's it, by this person, that kind of thing. You get an email when the file's open, things like that. ShareFile is designed for business. It's secure file transfer and very affordable, too. I use it. What I use it for is to send the radio station audio, whether, you know, we record stuff for them, ads and stuff. And I was using another solution, and I'm kind of a consumer-y solution, and it just was frustrating. They couldn't figure it out. They had to create an account, not with ShareFile. With ShareFile, it's very easy. I send the files along. They get a link in the email. They click. It's a secure link, and it goes to a page with my company logo, and it says, here's the file. They don't have to sign up for anything. I get a message that they downloaded it. It really is fabulous. ShareFile from Citrix, the easy-to-use business solution, allows you to exchange files quickly, securely. You also, by the way, I have the ShareFile app on all my devices. And anything, the ShareFile folders sync automatically, so I don't even have to have them on my device. I can see them on my device. I can send them from the device, which I can tell you has helped me many a time when I forget to mail it from my desktop. Sign up today. You'll get a 30-day, no-obligation free trial. Go to ShareFile.com. Now, you'll see a big green try it free button. Don't do that. There's up. They hide this. I don't know why. Up at the top, say it says radio listeners. Click here. That little tiny microphone. They apparently don't want to give me any money. Put the offer code tech guy, one word there, tech guy. And then if you don't have to, but if you choose the industry, they'll customize it for all these different industries. It's really kind of neat. Everything from accounting to real estate, food service to government. Yeah, government. NSA, I'm telling you, you could use this. You'd be happy. ShareFile.com. Nobody get mad at you. Try it today. Offer code is Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about technology, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that jazz, privacy, security, federal spying and warrantless wiretaps. It's that's kind of going to be the topic of the day, I have a feeling. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you have a question or a comment. If you want to talk about this, 888-827-5536. I'm sorry about the first hour devoted really to setting this up. I wanted to make sure that we understood the parameters of what we're talking about, what, you know, without too much sensationalism, what's going on. And I would just reiterate the thing that I have said for years, which is if you put something on the internet, you must presume it's public, even if it isn't apparently public. You know, you're posting on Facebook. It happens all the time that it is accidentally revealed, whether by you or by Facebook. We know now the government listens to phone calls on the cell system. Maybe not listens to phone calls, but certainly knows who you're calling. I think there's no doubt about that. that we learned about that when we found out. Remember the whistleblower in 2007? It was an AT&T guy who said, yeah, there's an NSA box in the cabinets. Yeah, they're spying on all the AT&T traffic. That was 2007. This is nothing new. We learned about President Bush's warrantless wiretaps in 2001, 12 years ago. This is nothing new. So, and, you know, Facebook and Google and others often accidentally reveal stuff. So if you are if you're transacting business online that you want to be private, then you really need to think about ways to make that secure. And you should presume that if you're doing it online or on a cell phone or in any electronic form, that there is a good chance that at least the federal government is spying on you, if nobody else. There you go. What's and it shouldn't, and anybody's been paying attention shouldn't be too surprised about this. All right, Heather, I'm sure you're, are you getting calls about this, or people just want to know how to fix their printer? I mean, what is the tenor of the tone of the conversation here?
So far, they do just have their own personal problems.
Yeah, that's pretty
much
it.
Lane is very much linked, and I did want to start out with him because he's like, hey, not cool.
Lane is in Signal Hill, California. Hi, Lane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning. What do you think?
Thank you for educating us on...
Do you think that's a fair summary, given what you've read of what's going on?
Yes. I'm retired. I listen to online to conservative radio all day while I'm doing my chores.
And I'm sure you'll hear a lot of outrage about this.
There is.
Yeah.
And I knew, you know, the one interesting thing that I thought was, it's always whose ox is being gored.
Right.
And most of the things that Congress applies to us doesn't affect them. And so one of the most interesting testimonies this week was when Eric Holder was before somebody. I don't even know where.
Our attorney general, yeah, who's been very aggressive in some very unpleasant ways, yeah.
Yes, and one of our elected representatives asked him, well, of course you're not monitoring our telephone conversations and emails. And he said, well, I have to talk about that in private.
No. Of course they are. In fact, these technologies do not distinguish between members of Congress and anybody else.
Right. So that was...
Although I would bet you that just as the president is given a special BlackBerry with multiple layers of encryption, that members of Congress have access to encrypted telephony.
We have no reason to believe our government is that smart.
And that I'll grant you. There are ways to secure your conversations. There are ways to chat in a secure way, so secure that I think we can pretty much guarantee that even the NSA, which has access to technology far beyond that of mortal man, cannot easily crack into. Whether using a technology like that would be a red flag is another matter. And I think a lot of times they're not looking at the contents. They don't have the bandwidth to look at the contents. They're looking at who you're talking to, when you're talking to them, and trying to piece together threads using fairly sophisticated data modeling. And then maybe they do all that. Maybe one of the pieces is that traffic encrypted? Oh, it is. Well, that's a red flag. So I just feel like there's ways tech, and somebody's saying this is not a news talk show. Let's not get into this. I agree. It's not a news talk show. This is a technology show, but this is a technology issue. And there are certainly ways to secure yourself. I think the real strong message is if you're doing it online, if you're doing it with a cell phone, you're doing it in public. Right?
Yes, I agree. In fact, I kind of look at it, you know, like when we're speeding on the freeway, you know, how the bears catch the salmon when they're running in the stream. And my visual is there's so many of us.
Right.
That, you know, most of us get through.
Right.
And, however, because our phones basically can talk back to us, answer our questions, no more, that's why they call it a smartphone.
Right.
It knows more than we do. it makes you wonder, can they pull us out of the noise?
Yeah, I think they can. I think the technology exists for data analysis. I've seen some amazing stuff that you can. The Bears are getting better. The salmon may be getting thicker, but the Bears are getting better, and I think you should presume that they can. But I would, you know, certainly, as I mentioned, you're going to catch dumb bad guys. If you're a smart bad guy, there's no reason to be a salmon. And that's why I wonder about the effectiveness of all of this.
Right.
The other thing I would say is that when we run in fear, the terrorists have won, and that the goal of terrorism is terror. And I think you could make a very strong case that the attacks of 9/11 have had a terrifying rippling effect throughout the American consciousness for the last 12 years. And that was the real effect of 9/11. And it was a very severe effect. And you can see it now. And that's sad. Yeah. That's sad. I would say better to walk in freedom than to cower in fear.
Yes. And so far, our government, you know, when...
Well, we asked him to. We asked him to. We said, protect us.
Yes, we did. But when in the Boston attack, when the Russians had said, you know, this guy's not good, and we can't convert the information to useful information,
right?
Is it worth giving up our freedom?
Right, exactly. How effective was all that? Not so good. Not so good.
Okay.
And then you talk about shutting down an entire city, which everybody did gladly. I mean, invasion of privacy, forget it. Billions of dollars in lost business, people cowering in fear in their homes for a day. You can see the effect of this stuff. Terror does work if you let it. Thank you, Lane. I appreciate the thought. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Next to Kevin in Lake Elsinore, California. Kevin, Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. Great.
What do you think of all this?
Hey, like you said, the public, we ask for it.
We get what we ask for.
Exactly, exactly. Yep. If it makes us safer, like you said, you're going to catch a lot of dumb bad guys.
Exactly. The guy who, you know, the guy trying to set his shoe on fire in an airplane.
Idiot.
And now I have to take off my shoes. For the next 6 years, everybody has to take off their shoes before they get in an airplane.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. It's security theater.
Exactly.
So what can I do for you?
Pretty much I had a question. Me and my wife were talking about this last night, driving home with our kids. We've got a bunch of iPads. We got three kids. And pretty much trying to limit their time on it. And we're
ooh,
trying to figure
I like
out, is
this.
There an app out there?
Let's talk about it. I've got to take a break. Hang on, okay?
Go ahead, bud.
Yeah. A little break. We'll come back. Protecting your kids on your iPad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It sounds strangely like the Doctor Who theme. You see all the speculation about who's going to be the new Doctor Who. It's so funny. So fun to watch. And, of course, the British bookies, they all have odds for all the different people. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo is the number if you want to talk tech. We're talking to Kevin in Lake Elsinore, California, about his kids and the iPad. Now, what you said you're looking for, is it parental controls? What are you looking for?
Almost like a time limit is what we're looking for.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
You know, get in there, and that way you don't have to fight with your kids. Hey, shut it off, it's bedtime. Or shut it off, you know, you've been on for 45 minutes, let's shut it down.
Okay, there's no way to do that with the iPad, but I did do that with my kids, and I'll tell you how. Because, you know, especially as they get older, it gets, because they take it upstairs. So, yeah, I'm going to bed. And then 3 in the morning, you hear giggling.
Exactly.
Or thumping. So the iPad has pretty good parental controls. You probably found them. They're in the just right there in the general settings. And it's, you can actually say what apps they could use. So if there's like games... You know, they can't stop playing Candy Crush. You could disable it. You can also have what kind of content by age and privacy and all this stuff. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't say, hey, turn it off after 10 p.m. For that,
okay.
Here's what I would do. Now, this isn't going to be a complete solution for you, but at least you could turn the internet off.
Gotcha.
And I think for a lot of kids, that's going to be, you know, if they're playing Candy Crush, you're probably out of luck. Although a lot of the fun of that is internet enabled, but for the most part, my kids were going on YouTube. They were chatting with each other. They were doing internet stuff. And as they get older, that's really going to be the issue. And your router, in many cases, has time limit restrictions built into it. It also may have access control. So what I did is I said I had an Apple router, and Apple routers do this, and many others do. I went into the router, and I said, after 10 p.m., these MAC addresses, these specific devices are no longer online. Dad's okay. Online. Dad's surfing, watching YouTube, chatting with his friends, but not the kiddies.
Nice.
And that worked really well. So look in your router for access control lists. As I said, the Apple Airport Extreme does a very good job of that. It can say, you know, this machine is off the air. And so that's nice. The other thing that you can do is, somebody's saying, is that fair? Mark, you must be a teenager. It's not fair. You're online. Yes, that's because I'm the parent. Have you said that yet? How old are your kids?
9, 7, and 5.
Yeah, you've probably said that a few times. Because I'm the parent.
But why?
But why, Danny? It's not fair. Life is not fair, my child. And I'm the parent because I said so. Do it by machine. Do it. I know what I was going to say. OpenDNS.com.
DNS, okay.
OpenDNS.com, every parent should know about. You can protect them from, adult sites, but you can also restrict their use. And I'm trying to remember, but I think OpenDNS has time controls as well. That's nice because you put that, any router will do that. You put that, what you'll do is you'll replace the DNS settings in the router with OpenDNS.com's addresses, and then you have total control over what happens. And because it's on the router, not on their computer or iPad, they can't do anything about it.
Even better.
Yeah, I love it. There's a free service, and then for a little bit more, you can get a little more capability. I used this the entire time the kids were growing up. OpenDNS.com works really, really well.
Gotcha. Thank you so much, Leo.
You're welcome. Good luck. I know that's a challenge, believe me. My son graduated yesterday from high school. He's 18. My daughter's 21. Now I can't stop them. And by the way, if you give them smartphones, you're out of luck, right? Because if they've got an iPhone, they just turn off the Wi-Fi and use the carrier data, and you can't protect them. I go up to the school. The kids go to a school or went to a school that high school that had lots of laptops, and of course they used internet filtering as most schools do, and they wouldn't let the kids on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter. Come on, what happens? The kids pull out their iPhones and they do go on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Vine. They do all that stuff. You'll have to put a copper mesh blanket over the entire school if you want to stop it. Glenn in Alexandria, Louisiana. Is that right? Hi, Glenn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello? Oh, did I push the button? Let me push the button. That would help. Hi, Glenn.
Yes. Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Thank you. I would like to know your recommendation. I'm trying to pick up my off-the-air TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
And I try several of the indoor antennas, some with better results than other, but none of them really satisfying. I'm thinking that I may have to go over the roof. Of course, once that is installed over there, I'm not going to be able to just, uninstall it and take it back if it's not working that much better.
Right. So you're in an area in Alexandria where you don't easily get over the air signals. Is that right?
I do get some channels. Mainly the stronger ones and well located, but I would like to have access to the other networks
that you can't get currently. But presumably, if you had a good enough antenna, you could.
I can get, but I hate to you're watching a program and in the best moment, it just cuts off on you. And
right. This is funny. We haven't heard about. 95% of America is on cable now. So antenna issues are very, people don't talk about them a lot. There's a great site that I would recommend if you want to do antenna. You can do, there are specialty antennas that solve these problems. As a ham, hams have learned a lot about this. I did it particular because I have such terrible reception for ham radio here in the brick house because we have so much RF. It's called AntennaWeb, antennaweb.org. They're bottom line is maximize your television reception. It's a joint venture of the National Association of Broadcasters, who do want you to watch, and the Consumer Electronics Association. Now, a lot of this is not super sophisticated, but at least it gets you started. AntennaWeb.org, because it's a nonprofit. Increasingly, people are just not even trying to do antenna. They're getting their television over the internet. If you have good internet access, you probably can get some of the over-the-air channels in other ways. For instance, in New York City and soon to be in other parts of the country, Aereo, A-E-R-E-O. I doubt it's available in Alexandria, but it may be coming your way because there have been a lot of court challenges. The networks hate this. In fact, Fox and CBS both responded to losing in court over Aereo. Well, we're just going to take our stuff off broadcast. So there. Aereo is an amazing story. Because basically what they do is they put up, if you had a friend in New York, you could get this. They put up arrays of quarter-sized, actually dime-sized antennas, tens of thousands of them on top of buildings in New York City. And when you subscribe to Aereo, what you're really doing is subscribing to a single one of those antennas. And this is why the court said, well, you can't really stop that because they're renting an antenna. It's not illegal. It's in New York. It's in Boston. It's slowly rolling out to more. Now that they have won in court, you're going to see it in many, many more cities. And down your way, well, I don't see anything in Louisiana, unfortunately. But Atlanta, Birmingham, Tampa, Miami. Right now, Boston and New York, and more coming. Great idea. If you find a friend in Atlanta, you could do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jet. I knew that music. Big old jet airliner. Johnny Jet is here. He's our travel guru. Helps us get the best travel deals using technology. And it's always fun to have Johnny Jet on the show. Hi, John.
How you doing?
I'm guessing you're in... Well, he showed me a chocolate chip cookie, so I think you're staying in a DoubleTree hotel.
No, I'm at my wife's apartment
Toronto. Homemade.
By the way, I won't be in town next week, so we might have to find a fill-in.
You want Natalie to do it next week?
She's going to be with me. We're going to be out. We're going to be out somewhere very remote.
Very romantic, I hope.
It could be.
You can have remote, but not romantic. You know, Antarctica is not very romantic.
It's not Antarctica.
No. Oh, good.
You can only go there.
Are you surprising her? Is that why you are hesitant to say, or you just don't want the fans?
She knows because right after I run out of here, I have to go and get a yellow fever shot that I forgot to get.
You know, I have a policy of never going to any country where I have to get yellow fever shots, but that's just me. That's just, you're going to Africa? India?
Maybe.
Asia?
Maybe.
Wow, how exciting. Do you have to get typhus typhus shots too?
Typhoid. Yeah, I got one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't. I haven't traveled anywhere where you have to get shots in quite some time. Used to be you'd have to get, more often you'd have to get shots. Now you don't. It's not so.
It's a bummer. First of all, it is a bummer. And they won't let you into the country that I'm going to without a yellow fever certificate. And it costs $220. It's going to cost me today.
iBookery says, are you going to Detroit? Is that where you're going? That's a bad joke, iBookery. So today we're going to talk about some great travel websites. Last week we talked about, what was it, planefinder.com?
Planefinder.net.
Net.
Which is a great site, and it's a newer site. And then I was looking at the chat room afterwards because I can't keep up with these guys. These guys, I can't talk.
I know, aren't they amazing?
They are.
They're amazing.
So MacMan actually told me that the Plane Finder has an app that you can use your iPhone, point it to the sky at a plane, and it'll tell you which plane it is. And I didn't know that. That's awesome.
You point it at the sky, and it says, that's Flight 17. Headed to Boston.
And what airline, where it's going.
Wow.
So that is awesome. And then just now, my sister sent me an email, said, I'm getting on my friend's private plane, and I'm going to Erie, Pennsylvania. And I was like, really? And I couldn't get in touch with her to find out, you know, her tail info or any of that. Because if you get the tail number of any plane, you can tell exactly where it's going. So anyway, I went to flightaware.com, which is one of my favorite sites. And I put in Erie Airport, K Erie, and it shows you all the flights that are arriving and departing. So I looked at their arrivals. They don't have a lot because it's not a big airport. And I saw one coming from Florida. And sure enough, I found my sister's.
Wow.
And then
you should have
just
pointed your phone at the sky.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm not in Florida.
Oh, okay.
And then someone else from your chat room, Jeff in London, suggested that I go to flightradar24.com, which I wrote about a year ago and I forgot about it. So I went in there, and you can, I found, you know, I zoomed in on it, and I can actually see the plane flying by street.
This is so cool.
And it just landed a few minutes ago, but it's unbelievable, the technology.
Well, all these planes have transponders. We know where they are at all times. You don't want to lose a commercial jet airliner. Right. So it makes sense that somewhere, the neat thing is that this data exists. What's cool about flight radar is the planes are actually moving on the map.
Yes, and that's what I loved about it.
Wow.
The ones in orange are a five-minute delay, and I'm not sure if that's an FAA thing or not, which I am assuming that it is.
And the ones in yellow are real-time. Wow.
That's real-time. So anyway, I thought people would really like that because I love it. I can just sit there and look at that all day long.
Wow. This is really neat.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. It's flightradar24.com.
And you can click on the plane. It will tell you the speed, the altitude, the destination, all the good stuff.
Wow. So, that is really neat. Wow. What a cool thing that is. Holy cow. All right. A couple of good sites there. Yeah.
So now I'm going to challenge you to a game called GeoGuessr.
All right.
So there's a lot of freaking flyers who, you know, they've been all around the world and they claim they know everything. Well, I want to see if they can, beat me at this game. Actually,
this is
GeoGuessr.com.
There's no E at the end. It's GeoGuessr.com. Although I Googled GeoGuessr spelled properly and it pointed me to the right spot.
So. Okay. So what they use is images from Google Maps Street View.
So it says, look at the area, figure out where you are, click the map to place your guess marker.
Which is on the right. The map is on the right.
All right. So I'm going to start playing. And so I'm just going to click. And now I have, how am I supposed to know? It's like the woods. I'm in the woods.
You can actually move it around. You can move around a little bit.
Oh, yeah. This really narrows it down.
I think that actually looks like Australia. So put somewhere in Australia.
Should I? All right. Johnny, good.
It could be wrong. It could be wrong.
Make guess, Australia.
Not the middle.
Well, you were right. It's Queensland. That's impressive.
Okay, so let's go to the next one.
We just got 2,000 points, John. You're good. Whoa.
This one.
This looks like, this is a crossroads in the middle of Nebraska? I see stop signs, right?
Actually, that's a good idea. I would put somewhere like in northern U.S. Canada.
North America. Right in the middle there in the 49th parallel and make that guess. And 429,000 kilometers off.
Oh, it
was in Iowa. No, I'm sorry. 429 point. We were very close. Okay. Okay, I picked Nebraska. We were in Iowa. You know what? This game's too easy, John. I've already got 4,575 points. Here's another one. All right, this is, wait a minute. I'm going to, look, onion roofs. We're in somewhere in Russia, right? The map's going to help. Let's go, the street sign, we're just going into Moscow. A street sign gives it away there. Now I have to find Moscow on a map. I think it's right about there.
No, a little to the left.
A little to the left?
Yeah, around there.
Around there?
Oh, actually, I can't even see on your map.
Yes, I was only 1,200 kilometers off. It was more left than I thought. Okay. It was actually on the road from Moscow to St. Petersburg.
Okay, good.
Hey, this is fun. This is GeoGuessr without an E at the end .com. And this is about the most fun I've had in ages. Look at this. Could be Ireland or somewhere. This is definitely. France?
It could be
Johnny, you've been everywhere. I've been everywhere. There's the ocean, man.
Yeah, it could be Ireland, Scotland, or it's got to be either, or England.
I'm going to say.
Summers.
Well, we'll just leave this as an exercise for the viewer, all right? I'm going to make guess.
I think it's England.
Oh, it's like the Orkney Islands or something. It was somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Channel Islands.
What is
it?
Yeah.
Sorry. What do you call it?
I don't know where that is. It's in the ocean. Is it the Canaries?
No. The Canaries are down by Africa.
The Azores?
I can't know. No. I can't even see. I can't see.
It's somewhere no one knows. It's in a mystery spot. Anyway, that's fun. You just gave us some really fun stuff, and nobody's going to be listening to the radio show anymore. In fact, I'm not even going to do the radio show anymore. I'm just going to play GeoGuessr for the rest of the day. That is fun.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah. John Jett. Johnny Jett at the website is johnnyjett.com. Great place to go. He is at Johnny Jett on Twitter. He's taking his wife to some mysterious locale next week, so he won't be here.
I am.
But it involves shots for yellow fever. How often do you go somewhere where you have to get shots?
Not that often.
Yeah.
I mean, I go.
I kind of make it a point to avoid.
The yellow fever shot's good for 10 years, but I've had typhoid shot, and that's good for 5 years. And I got that. I've been to India a few times since then. And, you know, Brazil, it's good to have it. You know, you should check the CDC's website.
Yeah.
That's a good website for research. But anyway, hey, I hear
just
the music,
start at so. JohnnyJett.com. Have a great time. You are such a romantic. That's wonderful. Have a great trip, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88 Ask Leo. We continue in our Blondie riff. I think this is all because of you, Heather. Nathan knows how much you love Blondie.
Correct.
It is. Yeah, he says. We know you love Deborah Harry. So, who should I'm still talking to Glenn, aren't I? Or am I?
Were we done with Glenn?
No, that was the antenna. Yeah, we did Glenn. So let's move on. Who should I? What do you? You got a board full of calls.
I'm leaning toward Monday, only because she held for... Because
it's been a long weekend. I agree. Sunday. Hi, Monday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, so I'm starting a new website, and I want to get advertising, but I have no clue how much to charge,
I wouldn't do it yourself. I mean, well, okay. So generally, most people use one of the agencies that sells ads. The most common, of course, is Google. But Microsoft does this. And there are companies like Federated Media that specialize in this. But in almost all cases, they'll take 45% to half of the ad revenue. On the other hand, you do nothing, which is nice. And you get a couple of bucks per click. I always start with AdSense. That's Google's. You see this on websites all over the place. Yeah, if you just google.com/AdSense, S-E-N-S-E, that's a great way to start. Then you don't have to pound the pavement. But if what's your site about?
It's a wedding coordination type thing.
So if your site has a topic like that, where there's kind of natural advertisers, and you may already, because you're in the business, know them, then that is a different matter. Then you can go out and start selling because, you know, maybe you're already dealing with these people as suppliers.
Well,
and say,
I'm kind of new. So
all right. Probably. If you don't have the connections, then I just start with Google AdSense.
Okay.
It's easy to put on the site. And you're not going to make millions of dollars, but a site with a lot of traffic can make as much as $1,000 a month. And that sure helps foot the bill.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You can't quit your day job yet.
And and do you suggest doing pay per click or like a monthly?
AdSense will just do it, and so you don't get to choose that. It is pay per click on AdSense. Now, let's say you're going out. This is for future reference or somebody else who's listening. Let's say you're going out and you're going to a company and you have a wedding coordinator website and there happens to be, you know, a company that does cakes, and you have a good relationship with them, and you want to go to them and say, "Hey, I want." The easiest thing would certainly be, if you can talk them into it, a flat monthly rate, and you're going to base that on the amount of traffic and the cost per 1,000 impressions. That is, how much it costs for 1,000 eyeballs looking at that ad. And generally speaking, I think you're talking a couple of bucks, a buck, two, three per 1,000. So if you get 10,000, it's not a lot of money, in other words. You get 10,000 visitors, $30, right? You can charge more if, that's why cost per click, you can get a little bit more, because then they at least know not only somebody saw it, but they clicked it. And the cost per click can go from anywhere from $5 to $100, depending on the site and how effective the ad is and all of that stuff. It's easiest to sell just a monthly flat rate. And on a new startup site, it's probably best, because you may not get a lot of clicks, right? So it's a sales job, basically.
Great.
Yeah, good luck. That's great. What's the name of the site going to be?
It's called CoordinateTheDate.
CoordinateTheDate.com?
Yep.
Good name. Like it. Yeah, first thing to do for anybody who's got a website and you want to make a little money on the side, Google AdSense, google.com/AdSense. Bing has something similar. So does Yahoo. So do many companies.
This is where Google makes all its money. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. Lillian on the line from Solvang, California.
Hi, Leo.
The lovely Danish town on the central valley. It's nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you. Well, last weekend I put my iPhone 4S through the washer. And I took it out. I put it in rice for 36 hours. Long story short, most of the functions have come back. The only thing that's not working, I can't connect to Wi-Fi, and the phone doesn't ring. Although when I go into the sounds and I click on one of those...
you can still hear it.
I can still hear it.
Oh, interesting.
So my question, I'm 2 weeks away from an upgrade, and I really didn't want to upgrade. I wanted to wait for the next version whenever that's coming out.
Right.
Is there anything else I can do to get some of these functions back, especially Wi-Fi?
There is. Okay. So first of all, there's a little strip of paper in your phone from 3M that tells people that it got wet. And Apple can actually look into, I've done this, I got a phone wet, on purpose even. And you take it to the Apple store, and the genius will shine a flashlight into the earphone jack and say, oh, yeah, you got it wet. So the first thing to know is never deny that you got it wet, because they know. Although, interestingly enough, 3M just recently admitted that sometimes extra high humidity can make that strip turn red, and Apple now has to go back. There was a class action lawsuit and compensate customers for whom they refused repairs because the strip was red. That's another story. You can. There are third party, and you should look in your town. I don't know about Solvang. Maybe.
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara would have it for sure. Companies that'll do this. iPhone repair companies. We have one here in Petaluma. And I actually brought the wet phone to him. He took the whole thing apart, replaced component after component. In this case, you know, the Wi-Fi won't work. That means the Wi-Fi radio probably got shorted out. Things get, the water shorts stuff out.
Okay.
And the first thing, so when you get a phone, and the problem is the iPhone, you can't take out the battery. If you could take out the battery, the first thing to do is go, whoa, and take out the battery as fast as your little fingers can do it, because now you're taking power out of the thing, and that prevents further shorting. Shorting can happen as soon as it gets wet. Then dry it. Now, the iPhone, you can't do that, so the first thing to do is shut it down, completely turn it off, if you can, and then dry it. 36 hours isn't very long. I'd go a week.
Oh.
Because if there's any moisture in there at all... you could still get a short the minute you turn it on. That was a mistake I made. I got it wet. I intentionally dunked it in a glass of water. I was testing out a product called Liquipel that said, of course it didn't work, that it would protect the iPhone in case of water damage. So I Liquipelled it, which involves sending it to the company, and then they coat it. And then I dunked it in a glass of water. Now, my mistake was I kept trying to turn it on. And in the process, fried every single component. In fact, the iPhone repair guy looked at the SIM card. He said, you shorted this too? Look, there's this big burn across it. So I pretty much made that phone unrepairable. The interesting thing is Apple gave me a new one for $200. They will do that sometimes. But my first choice, the cheapest choice, would be if you can find a good iPhone repair place in the big city. They can, in many cases, go component by component, say, well, we can fix that and we can fix that, and you're done. Might cost you $100, $200.
Okay. An iPhone repair store rather than the Apple store.
The Apple store, it's interesting. With iPhone 5s, they now have a big machine they put it in that replaces the glass. I don't know if it does anything else. In general, they're just going to swap the phone out. And if they believe that it was, you know, dropped in water, they can either charge you full price if they're nice. They have a lot of leeway. In my case, they said for $200 they'd replace it. The problem is I think a new iPhone's not out till September.
Yeah. Well, I went to Verizon and they wouldn't give me an early upgrade and they just wouldn't do anything.
That's nice.
I haven't been to the Apple store yet.
Apple's a little better. Okay. Yeah, you know, you can always say, nah, I'll hold on. You can always say, no, thank you. But you could see what they would offer you. And be very honest. As I said, they'll know immediately it was wet. So say, hey, look, it's got wet, and I love this phone. And you know, bring them cookies, whatever it takes. This is my favorite phone. My daughter went in. She dropped her phone 2 weeks in, smashed it into smithereens, glass everywhere. But she's a lovely young 21-year-old girl, and she kind of teared up, and they gave her a new phone.
Oh, nice.
So the genius has lots of leeway.
Do you think the it's worth waiting until September for the next version?
It's unknown. Apple, there's a lot of pressure on Apple to do something with the next iPhone. Because look at all these Android phones and the great leaps and strides they've taken since the last iPhone came out. So, but it's just unknown how much of a leap and stride Apple will take. Apple tends to be fairly conservative. So my suspicion is it will only be incrementally better. You have a 5? No, you said a 4S.
4S. I have a 4S.
Yeah, so you could, yeah. It will be a considerable improvement over a 4S, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's worth going to the Apple Store or trying to find a repair person.
Yeah, start with the Apple Store. See, you know, for $200, it might be worth it.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Leo.
My pleasure. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be back with more right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. This is the website that Johnny Jett, our travel guru, gave us. Next week, Johnny's going to be traveling somewhere with his wife. So he told us he's going to set us up with a guy who's an expert on bringing your cell phone internationally. That is a good topic for us. We get calls all the time. People want to travel and they want to know what international data plan they should get and all that stuff. So that's really good. Really good. Heather Hammond, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show. Heather's been collecting calls for us. I will let you choose so that I don't have to hear from you, anybody.
Oh, you were going to choose Andrew and Dayton anyway.
Oh, how odd is that? Exactly who I was going to choose. Hi, Andrew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather.
Hello, Leo.
Hello.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you again.
Yes, we talked a couple of Thursdays ago. Still grooving on that. That was a very cool conversation.
Grooving on a Thursday afternoon.
Exactly. Early evening, in my case, being in Ohio. But wanted to spend just a moment talking about Prism.
Yeah, so and I hope that folks heard the beginning of the show where I spent more than half an hour kind of dissecting the news of the week, this fact that it's been revealed that, shocking, that the government is spying on us using technology, in fact, technology companies perhaps like Google, Microsoft, and others.
Right, and you know, I think those of us kind of in the tech mode kind of knew that for the last few years at least,
and
certainly suspected it over the last dozen years. But to me, it's the secrecy with which they've been doing it.
I would use the phrase lack of transparency. Now, they would say, well, we have to be somewhat secretive because we don't want the bad guys to know what we're up to. But so we're telling your elected representatives in the House Intelligence Subcommittee, places like that, what we're up to. But of course, they're forbidden from saying anything. And I agree with you. This means there's no debate.
Right. And the other thing of it is, you know, the death penalty is not a program that's done in secrecy. It's meant more as a deterrent than to actually kill criminals. Would you agree?
Yes.
And don't you think by making this more transparent that we all know that everything we say and do is being watched, that it would actually...
I think their fear is that the bad guys go underground.
Right, but they could already do that. And you know, my question is, if they're so effectively doing this, if this is such a purposeful thing,
right,
then how did the Boston bombings occur, the Newtown shootings?
Right.
Did not Facebook and YouTube and all sorts of posts come to light after the fact?
In fact, what we're seeing is that they may be gathering the data, but they're not doing such a great job of finding the needle in that haystack.
Right. And I'll just update you with this, and then I'll get to my question, which is networking. But Glenn Greenwald has broken yet another story here in the last hour or so about a tool called, the Boundless Informant is what this tool is called, that actually calls through all the data they collect from all the countries, which is basically the world, that they're monitoring.
Wow.
And he put up a nice little graph about how much traffic and how much monitoring goes on. Literally billions of pieces of intelligence from every country. And we're like the second highest.
It's Glenn Greenwald writing for the UK Guardian newspaper that broke this story in the first place. And Glenn's been writing about security for some time, about privacy for some time. And he says no healthy democracy can endure when the most consequential acts of those in power remain secret and unaccountable. And I think that is true.
And I don't think a lot of people want to live in a surveillance state. We're getting the same reasoning behind this as Nazi Germany got back in the day.
Right.
that it's all for our security. And guess what? We're just not secure. Right. Anyone can shoot us as we walk down the street, as we saw in, where was that, Santa Monica yesterday.
Right.
There's just no preventing that. That said...
What was it, Ben? What was it, the great Ben Franklin quote about security? Let's see if I can find it here.
It's something along the lines of those who sacrifice their privacy...
Here, I'll give it to you.
...security deserve neither.
Yeah. He who would... Let me give them the direct quote. He who would trade liberty for some temporary security deserves neither liberty nor security.
I would tend to agree with that.
I think that's exactly the situation we're in right now.
Exactly. And if we look at the security that we're getting for what we're paying in terms of privacy, the return is not that good.
Right.
To me, you'd be better off putting your privacy in a savings bank and getting 0.2% interest, but that's just me. Okay, the actual tech question I've got for you. I've been doing computers. I'm in like my 32nd year, started with a TI-99/4A back in the day, CPM, pipping and sysing disks, you know, all before there was a thing called DOS. I've been doing this a long time.
Pip. That's a great, boy, that's a great memory.
Pip and sys your disk, right? And then you can write your 90K to the disk, right? Unless you took a hole punch to it and cut a notch on the side.
That's
then you
right.
flip it over and you can actually fit 180K. Wow.
You are an old timer.
Those were the days.
Yes. Life was simpler
anyway,
then.
Yeah. Disks aren't floppy anymore. What can you do? In any event, the one thing I don't have a lot of experience while I'm very well-versed in networking is having a super huge mansion-size house to try to get Wi-Fi to all the corners of my house.
Non-trivial. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're a geek. You probably heard us talk about WDS before, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, the wireless distribution system. It's a standard, not a very well-written standard, but a standard that allows you to basically put repeaters in. And I do this at home with an Apple Airport Express, which is the little $99 wireless router. And an Airport Extreme. When you plug in an Airport Express, it says, well, I can be a router on my own, or would you like me to extend an existing wireless network? And I say extend. And it says, okay, well, I see this Airport Express. Should I join that network? I say yes. I still see one network in my house, but I could put these Airport Expresses, as long as they're close enough to the main base station so that they can repeat, and you can extend ad infinitum. You can continue on. I don't know of any real limit to this. Except money, because it's $100 for each extender. Now, I do recommend that you buy the repeater or the extenders, they have different names, from the company that made the original base station. They seem to work best that way.
Okay, gotcha.
So Linksys, Netgear, that kind of thing. And they all sell them.
In this case, it's Linksys, and I believe it's the EA4500 router or something very close to it that's being used. And then there's, I guess, what's called an access point, and it, too, is a Linksys, or actually Cisco, I guess, in this case. Same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Cisco bought Linksys, although there's rumors they're going to get rid of it because they're so unhappy. But that's another matter.
Right. So, basically, this
The key is that you buy these additional access points. You put them in bridging mode, right? You don't want them doing routing because then you have too many routers, too many cooks in the kitchen. So they bridge, which means they don't do anything except pass it along. And it's a very simple thing to do. I don't know the model number that you should get, but I think that it will be – I don't know if it's the access point or something. Access points do use WDS if you want. In fact, wait a minute. They make one called a WDS access point.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so that's what you need. And you could put those all over the place. There's lots of solutions online for doing it, but I don't think you'll even need to look up anything. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, so the one they've got now, which is an access point, I assume, is not getting a steady wireless connection. So would it behoove us to put some sort of a repeater in between those things?
Well, if everything's working, then I wouldn't worry about it. Are you getting good bandwidth at the other end?
No, it's actually dropping.
Okay, that's because it's weak. Yeah, that's because it's weak. So that's the first symptom, is it slows down and then drops. So, and eventually, you get far enough, it never even starts. So, yes, that's a sign that maybe a repeater about halfway would be – you can – you know, RF, radio frequency, is a little bit of a black art. You play with it. Positioning the router in different places, the repeater in different places will give you different results. Just play with it till you get the optimal
result. Not a bad idea to get a Wi-Fi analyzer for your computer. That helps you look at the signals, find good channels, etc. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nathan S., our musical coordinator, doing a great job. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo is the number. We're going to continue on, Heather H., with our discussion of Wi-Fi. Who should I talk to?
Yes, Jason in Huntington Beach is chiming in.
All right. Hi, Jason. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I work for a company, actually. We do primarily enterprise-grade networks for Wi-Fi solutions, and just wanted to chime in about the WDS you're talking about.
An expert. That's what I want. Yes.
Yeah, so with the WDS, same thing as, like, repeater. I don't know if you've used repeater mode on the access points before, but it does reduce the signal by about half. So if you're getting, you know, the bandwidth, you're getting, let's say, 50 megabytes in a home, and your wireless gets 40, when you use the WDS, you'll get 20, then 10, then 5.
But does that reduce it by half if you're next to the home base station?
Every time.
Everywhere in the whole network.
Yep.
Okay. That's not so good, is it?
No, and usually, like, with those, I know with our products and other products out there, they have limitations of users and all that other stuff as well.
Right.
But as you already know, you can set limits on how much bandwidth each user has and stuff like that. So,
what do you recommend then, if not WDS?
Usually, just setting up multiple access points in access point mode, because as long as they have the same SSID password encryption, then you can actually roam throughout the home and have it hop point to point.
So just get another access point. Now, do you set them in bridge mode, or do you just leave them as a normal?
Just access point mode. So you have
access point mode,
bridge, WDS, and repeater.
Okay.
You just leave them in access point mode with the standalones, like any of the Cisco or the company I work for is PackEdge. We have those as well.
So that's preferable to using WDS. It's more expensive because you're getting a full router, but you put that extra router in access point mode.
Well, with Apple, they have it's the router unit, so you have to put it in the bridge mode. And unfortunately, that's the way they're set up. But if you have a standalone just access point, you can plug those in and do those everywhere.
Do other companies, Linksys, Netgear, D-Link, they all sell access points?
Yeah. Oh, they all sell separate access points.
Okay. That's what our caller was asking about. So that is what he should get. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of smaller name companies that you'll find out there. Luxel, Ubiquiti, Ruckus, PackEdge. I mean, there's a lot of companies that do the standalone.
And how much do these access points cost? Are they less expensive than a full wireless access point?
All depends on the company and what you're getting out of it.
Right.
If you're getting something like ours, they're actually like the enterprise high grade.
Right.
So you're getting 5,000 square foot coverage.
Right. We do the same thing here at the studio. We originally used kind of consumer grade wireless access points, and it became very clear very quickly that that's not going to work.
Yeah, it all depends on what you're running in the home. And since most of what we do is with home automation and stuff like that, there's a lot of data traveling on the network. And then throwing the internet into it just makes everything a little more difficult. So,
well, since I have a Wi-Fi expert on the line, let me ask you about 802.11ac. This is the next generation of Wi-Fi. We did A, B, G, and N, and now we're going to AC. Supposedly faster, better. It has some interesting features. It can aim at the device and things like that. Yeah. What do you think? Have you tried it yet?
I'm more excited about AD.
Oh, yeah, of course. You wouldn't be interested in AC when there's AD. AD? I don't even know about AD.
So with AC, it's going to be a 5.0 only, so it's going to have reduced range.
That's 5 gigahertz. And, of course, let me just explain. 5 gigahertz, the higher the frequency, the more it bounces off stuff and the shorter the distance. So while 5 gigahertz is nice because it's not as crowded as the traditional 2.4 gigahertz, it may not work as well. That could also be an advantage if you don't want the neighbor to pick up your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it all depends on where you live. And, I mean, there's a lot of different opportunities for it. And with that 5 gigahertz, it's great for Apple products and stuff like that.
Right. So you'd suggest waiting for AD?
I think because AC is supposed to be met upon with IEEE in November.
Right.
And AD is supposed to be a couple months after beginning of 2014.
You might see the name WIGIG, W-I-G-I-G, for AD. That's going to be the trade brand name. What makes AD good?
It's going to have both 2.4 and 5, so you're going to be able to get devices that have the dual band, dual concurrent, so you can choose what you're using.
And they claim 7 gigabits per second.
There's always a theoretical claim.
Never happened.
What it can actually do is based on how much money we put into the device.
Have you seen AD devices yet?
No, I haven't seen. I've seen a lot of the AC, but since there's not a lot of consumer products out there that really have AC on them, except for some of the laptops with Asus and stuff like that, and even then, they're not really taking advantage of the new band.
I think, given what you've said, it sounds like AD might leapfrog AC and end up being the choice. I know Dell is doing AD laptops and others. So, and there's a chipset from Qualcomm. As well as Marvell and Atheros. So it sounds like AD might have some broad industry support that makes it be the choice.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely bypass AC in maybe a couple months, but it's almost like waiting for a new iPhone. If you have to wait 6 more months to get the new version, I mean, you might as well wait it out. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck with technology that's kind of left behind.
Right. Hey, Jason, it's great to have a Wi-Fi expert on. I thank you. So just to summarize, the WDS system, which is an older system that I had mentioned, has one chief disadvantage. It reduces bandwidth throughout the area by 50%. Not so good. Mm-hmm. So you might want to look for an access point instead. All the manufacturers except Apple make access points. And and put that router in access point mode, and then you can just put more of them all over the place, get the same benefit. And finally, the next generation of Wi-Fi, 802.11ac, has one big disadvantage, 5 gigahertz, so maybe wait for AD, which is dual band.
Yep.
Unless you live in an apartment, as I did, and I didn't want anybody next door to hear me, and then I used the 5 gigahertz, and I was happy.
New York City.
Hey, thank you, Jason. Really great to talk to you.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
I'm a big fan. So
thanks. Nice to have experts on the air every once in a while. Let's talk next to Tiss in Reading. Hi, Tiss. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I was wondering if you need anything outside of your cell phone to pick up a signal. I don't know what exactly it might be, a radio tower or satellite. And if it's not there, will your cell phone not work?
What signal would that be that you're trying to pick up?
Say like on your cell phone you have bars where...
Oh, you mean improve the number of bars on your cell phone, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a couple of choices there. One is a... what they call a femto cell. That's the technical term. AT&T, almost all the cell companies will sell this. Sometimes they call them microcells. You hook it up to your internet connection in your house, and it's like a little cell repeater site in your house. Sometimes if you really complain, I cannot, this phone won't work, I'm going to give it back, I don't want it, because it doesn't work in my house, they'll actually give you one of these. So that's the first thing to do, is to call your cell phone company and say, I want a femto or a microcell. There are repeaters and things that will work, but that means that you're going to be able to go somewhere nearby and get a full 5-bar signal. And usually that's not an option. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stream Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And let's talk to Richard. A couple of things I wanted to mention just before we got off the subject. We've got a couple of... updates on stuff we've talked about earlier in the show. First of all, somebody was calling about restricting his kids' use of the iPad, and our chat room has come up with this program. It's called Time Lock from Bitworks Design. Works on iPad or iPhone, and it will lock the iPad. Presumably you haven't given the kids the password. It will lock the iPhone or iPad after a certain amount of time. So that's, I don't know how it would work. In fact, it's a bafflement to me because I guess you can run it in the background. I don't know. Anyway, haven't tried it. 99 cents, time lock, time limit for parents. And then we were talking just a minute ago with Jason about Wi-Fi and his preference, for good reason, to use access points as opposed to WDS repeaters. One note, thank you to Bill Vlahos, who's in the studio, who told me this. Of course, the access point has to have access to Ethernet. It's just like a regular access point that you have to plug into your internet access. That's why it's used more widely in enterprise, where they have Ethernet running throughout the building. It might not make a lot of sense in your house,
In fact, it doesn't make sense at all. That's why you use a repeater, because you want to get extend the wireless. If you had Ethernet, you wouldn't have a problem. So there you go. 8888 ask Leo. Sybil says that Time Lock actually works through the Apple Clock app, which is allowed by Apple to run in the background. That's why that makes sense. It sets an alarm, I guess, in effect. Back to the phones we go. Richard in Lake Forest, California. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I particularly, you know, the talk about the government trying to find bad guys. This does not bother me so much as people targeting people for specific political opinions. And I think it's real easy to get people to read into what does the government want to do and things like that. And that concerns...
Are you talking about the IRS targeting Tea Party organizations or...
You betcha. That's where people are going beyond just trying to catch bad guys, criminals, and terrorists. If they want to listen into my phone calls, I assume they do, and they'll find out just how boring my life is.
You know, there is that defense. Well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. But that always makes me a little nervous. And what if you presume the government was targeting Tea Party groups for political reasons as opposed to for tax reasons, which I'm not sure, but and this isn't a political talk show, so I won't debate that issue. Then what would stop them from listening into your phone calls and listening for certain words and then targeting you? So that's the fear, is that, well, if you have a government that's willing to do one thing and they have the tools to do it globally, what's to stop them? So if you believe that they targeted the Tea Party, then you should be. I think you should be afraid, because then they're going to start listening for words like overthrow the government in your phone calls. And that would be scary. I don't want that to happen.
I agree. But the reason I'm calling is a couple weeks ago, you were talking about cloning hard drives.
Yeah.
And, you know, I back up religiously. I have Carbonite. I have USB hard drives, external hard drives that I back up to. But more, you know, the concern I have is backing up how I've got all my programs set up, because a few times in my life I've had to reformat hard drives and it took days and days to get everything back the way I wanted it. And I'd like to clone a hard drive, but, you know, I don't feel like I have to clone all of the data files I have. And you had recommended a few programs.
This is why you would use a disk imaging program as opposed to a backup program. It's part of an overall backup strategy, but it's just different. And maybe you do both. The clone means I'm going to take the drive at a certain point in time and make an exact copy so that I can go back to that exact point in time at any time. And that will back up everything, settings, apps, everything. I don't know of a way to separate out, you know, data and settings and so forth. It's going to back up everything. Now, one advantage of having data on a different drive or a different partition of the same drive is that you can then just clone the operating system and the apps, and the data is a separate entity. Does that make sense?
Well, how do you go about doing that? I bought a digital hard drive and I put it on my desktop unit, but it's not the same size. And so if I try to bring everything over, it won't fit on the digital.
Right. You need a big enough hard drive to fit it all, obviously.
Right.
So here's what I see. So you're saying I want to make it smaller.
Yeah.
I get it. Well, okay, the first thing to do is get a hard drive that's as big as the hard drive you're trying to image, for obvious reasons. If it's smaller, well, you know, good news, hard drives are cheap. So here's, let me give you kind of more of a larger overview of what I'm recommending. Imaging software, and there's lots of it. EaseUS.com makes one. Clonezilla is a free Linux-based one. DriveSnapshot.de. We'll put a list in the show notes at TechGuyLabs.com. Lots of these programs, free and commercial. The first was Norton Ghost. That's still around. There's almost an infinite supply of these. They do one thing only. They back up your hard drive. They clone it exactly as it is right now. I use that as a way of speeding up a reinstall.
So I'll do a couple of ghost images. One of my primary install. I've just installed Windows, update it. Nice to do that. And I'll make that. That image is a Windows installer. But it's faster than the Windows installer because it's going to, in 5 or 10 minutes, blast it in. That won't have to be as big as the original hard drive, right? Because Windows isn't taking up the whole hard drive. It's only as big as the amount of data used. So you could put that on another hard drive. You probably can even get that on a 32 gig USB key without any trouble. So that's one. Then the second one I do is that then I install all the apps that I know I want, Office and whatever. Customize it. And I make another image of that. So I have two images. One is a base Windows install with updates. The other is a Windows install with apps. Depending on where I want to go, I've got both of those. Think of them as your own personal recovery disks. The problem is, of course, they get out of date pretty quickly. As soon as there's a Windows update, now they're a little bit behind. So you just have to remember, I'm going to do the recovery, and then I'm going to update everything that's on there. Now you want to do regular backups of your data. My recommendation, if you're setting up a Windows machine for the first time, is to have a C drive that is just Windows and applications. Make it big enough for those. And a D drive, mnemonically named, for your data. And you can tell Windows, my documents goes on D. You could even say my home folder, the whole thing goes on D. And that way, you can restore, backup and restore C without worrying about your data. And you can back up and restore your data without worrying about C. Does that make sense? Always a great idea to have data separate from the operating system. It just makes operating system upgrades a lot easier, a lot less risky. And it makes backup easy, too, because now you back up D. You've got an image of C. You don't have to even worry about it anymore. Most of the time, you don't want to back up Windows and your apps because you have a copy somewhere. So back up C once with an image program so that you can restore it quickly. And then back up D all the time so you have anything that you've created that's new. Does that make sense? Some people do this, cloning thing a regular basis. I find that inefficient. You're backing up more than you need. However, whatever works for you, the main thing is make sure you have 3 copies of everything. 2 different forms of media, and one of them off-site. That's the rule. 3-2-1 backup. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DiBartolo, he is our gadget guru, joins us every week. At this time, he is the longest-running writer, I think. One of them, anyway, for Mad Magazine. You can stop running now, Dick.
Oh, thank goodness.
It's only every other month now.
Oh, okay.
What a relief. And, of course, a gadget hound from way, way back. In fact, so much so that he's actually rented, this is crazy, a facility in New York at great expense to store his old gadgets. We call
it. Can't part with them.
Can't part with them. We call it the gadget warehouse. He calls it my ball and chain.
Yes, exactly.
So what do you got for us today? Something new for the Gadget Warehouse?
You know what? Well, this will be in the Gadget Warehouse, I think, a fair number of years from now because it's pretty neat. It's brand new from Bose. It's not available for a month yet, but this past week they invited a bunch of journalists to Grand Central Terminal where we were put in a little presentation area, and they do great things at Bose. We're sitting in this what we think is a sealed room, and then they go, people take their electronics everywhere. They take them to bustling Grand Central Terminal, and one of the walls of where we're sitting suddenly becomes transparent, and we're looking at thousands of people running to catch trains.
Wow!
Yeah, it's very clever. So what they were introducing is called the SoundLink Mini. And they a couple of years ago, they introduced a regular SoundLink. But the SoundLink Mini is a new Bluetooth speaker that is going to compete directly with speakers like the Jambox. It's a little guy, 2 inches by 2 1/3 inches by 7 inches. Puts out amazing sound. They walked around the room and put it on a table next to each person for about a minute so you could listen to the music. And the gentleman up there told me that they spent 4 years
to design new speakers that would have twice the output of their previous speakers. And then they were half the size, so they could get this into a palm-sized device. Once you charge it up, you can take it on the road or to the beach for, it'll play for 7 hours. And what impressed me most was you always play the what's it gonna cost game. And I said to Dennis, this is at least $249, possibly $299.
Because Bose tends to be a little pricey.
Yeah, they do. They do. It's going to be $199.95. Sounds really excellent. I think it's going to give other small speakers a real run for their money. An aluminum casing. And you can pre-order it now, but it's going to ship about a month from now, I think. They told me mid-July they would start shipping units. Called SoundLink Mini Bluetooth Speaker System.
And probably available everywhere, right? I mean, stuff is everywhere.
Yes. Not at discounts. It's kind of like Apple.
Yeah.
It'll be at their stores.
Well, that's such a good price for a Bose product.
I compare it to the
Jawbone Jambox, which is what, 150, right?
You know what? The first one was 199.
Oh, same price. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you think? You have both. Compares well.
You know what? Actually, you have my Jambox, so that's why I'm.
We'll
play them over the phone.
Oh, compare them. Yeah, you play yours there, and I'll play mine here.
You travel much more.
I love the Jambox. I don't even just use it traveling. I use it when I go to bed at night. I use it when, you know, because it's tied to my phone, and I can just carry it around. You know, I bring it to the bathroom while I'm brushing my teeth. I would bring it upstairs and listen to the breakfast nook. So it's just like a little portable speaker system.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But if this is the same price, and the Jambox is down to $129.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they realized probably that was a little expensive. Maybe $200 for a Bose, that's not bad.
No, it's not. It's not. I think you'll probably hear them and compare them. And then
I will have to do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Dick DiBartolo is the GizWiz. Go to gizwiz.biz. That's his website, and he's got notes on this product and everything else that he talks about on all the different shows that he does, including his podcast on our Twit Network every Tuesday. And if you're there, click the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. There are 12 autographed copies for the best correct answer, 24 for the best silly answer. So get silly, man. Get silly.
Yes.
Love that. And the last one was a paint dripper stopper.
Close. A paint dripper stopper that held the brush in place magnetically over the can.
Right. Yes. Paint brush holder. Yeah. This one, we don't know what it is, but that's why we play the game. Thanks, Dick. Stick around. We're going to do the Giz Fizz right after the radio show on the Twit Network. I think we might have time for one more call. So let's say hi to David in New York. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Domain name question.
Okay.
I'm in the process of writing a book that I'm going to try to probably just self-publish, you know, online through Smashwords.
And you're right. You should have your own website, too. You always should. People often say, well, I could just do a podcast on Google, or I could just have a website on Facebook. The problem is you're at the mercy of those companies. You always, 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 you should do all of that, but you should always also have a website for your book. And so I presume you're wondering about getting a domain name for your book.
Well, I'm trying to figure out strategically is the right word, but basically the way I have it in mind, I'm pretty set on the title being This Is Awesome and then the subtitle and all that. So the problem is thisisawesome.com is taken. In the meantime, you know, I've gotten thisisawesomebook.com.
That's fine. By the way, almost every book I've seen, the title is taken, and it's often the book. In fact, even now with movies, you know. It's not diehard.com. It's diehardthemovie.com or diehardmovie. So it's fine. People understand that. If you can get, what is it? This is awesome?
Yeah.
So this is awesome book.com or this is awesome thebook.com?
I already got it.
Got it. You're golden.
Okay. Well, the question then really is .tv worth it at all if you're not doing video content?
No, it confuses people. Yeah. Unless you're doing video, I wouldn't do .tv. In the same way, if you're not doing radio, I wouldn't do .am or .fm. Right. .com is the one you want. .net's the next best. Because those are both seen as general purpose sites.
I could get the .net, but I don't know if anyone's going to...
Don't worry about it. Yeah, the only time you buy all the other domains is if you're worried about squatters, you know. But if you've got .com, don't worry about it. Because everybody's going to try .com first.
So with the book, as long as I can get it with book, this is an awesome book, that's fine. All right.
That's fine. And let me recommend a great book for you. Guy Kawasaki's Ape, How to Publish a Book. This is really the definitive guide. It's on Amazon. Artisanal publishing. Highly recommended. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.